put Epstein here with his little UFO on a NASA tower because Epstein was given a free ride by our government.
I got some nice friends, you know, who could come and keep you company here. You could use them as pieces of furniture. This one guy looks just like a bookcase. I could fix for you to attend executions. How would you like that?
Today we're going to cover a film by the great Stanley Kubrick. Yes, indeed. Lolita. If you've seen Lolita from 1962, it's black and white. 2.5 hours. Has the makings of everything I hate. except for Kubrick. I love Kubrick. And for a long time, I thought I should watch this film, given the subject matter, right? But I don't know, for whatever reason, didn't do that. And my man Skinny Fresh reached out and said, man, you gotta watch this. Told me about a clip on the film, a little segment of film that we'll get into that's gonna blow your mind. And if you haven't liked and subscribed on Instagram, at Isaac Weishaupt is the Instagram handle, you've seen the little video clip that I'm talking about, that I'm referring to. And if you haven't, well, now you get teased. I'm not gonna bring it up until we get to the end of this analysis. But it's really mind-blowing. It really is. And what's going to happen today, this show, which is a Patreon bonus, as a big thank you to all my supporters on Patreon, at whatever level of support you desire, we're going to get into this film, how it's the real agenda here. And I'm, you know, after watching this movie, I thought, damn, I should have put this in my book. This should have made it into Kubrick's Code. But you know, I'm a shark. I just keep moving. But yeah, I should have made it in the book now in hindsight. But we're going to get into this movie. We're going to break it down. I'm going to explain to you what it is. Plot spoilers, of course. If you haven't seen it, I don't know. Should you watch it? I didn't like it. It was fine. So no, I don't advise that you should go watch it before you listen to this. But, you know, if you're sensitive to such a thing, come back. Check it out. But we're also going to get into about, I don't know, about 7/8 through this film analysis, we're gonna branch off into talking about this Epstein show on Netflix. What's it called? It's called Filthy Rich on Netflix. It's a 4-part series, and I sort of alluded to covering this show on Instagram as well. I posted a few screenshots from the first episode, and we're gonna complete that analysis here. So you're gonna get it like a double bonus, a double Patreon bonus. Bam, bam. Now, what's this movie about? If you don't know what I'm talking about, from 1962, and it's about this old dude. He's 53 in the movie. I don't know if that's what the... It's based on a book, right? It's based on a book. I don't know how faithful it is to the book. I didn't read it. Sometimes I do that for you, but I didn't want to do that. The movie was too boring. That's not boring. That's not fair. Just not... Didn't interest me. So the movie's about this 53-year-old man who becomes a stepfather, and he's infatuated with his 12-year-old stepdaughter. That's what the novel's about, the ages, that is, because in the film, it's not really specified. It's a very creepy movie, to be honest, especially about, I don't know, halfway through, Lolita, the young girl, is like whispering into her stepdaddy's ear about a game she wants to play, and then it kind of fades to black, alluding to the idea that they played some kind of inappropriate game. I mean, I don't know if they were thinking about this stuff back then. I assume they weren't. But Kubrick was. This ties into the Kubrick theory that he, in fact, knew the Illuminati game plan and was trying to expose these creeps. These pizza creeps. Now, is this a good movie? 2.5 hours, like I said. It's already off on the wrong foot for me. But, you know, Kubrick's movies are always long. They're always like 2.5 hours, so it doesn't make a film bad. But, like, damn, ain't nobody got time for that. 2.5 hours? Ugh. Of pizza... of pizza gating. But Kubrick, you know, he's a great director. You know, he's a double OG, so... I'd say it's worth watching if you're into Kubrick, but I didn't really like it necessarily. I wouldn't watch it twice. Let's put it that way. I bought it on Amazon for like $5. I don't feel like I got ripped off. You know, and I defend Amazon sometimes. I don't know if you heard my other... I rant everywhere. Where am I ranting? I sort of defended... You know, and Amazon, they banned my book. I uploaded the vaccine conspiracy and they blocked it. And then Elon Musk came out to defend me. Not me, but defended one of his buddies who did this, had the same thing happen to him. And, I don't know, I kind of defend Amazon. Like, well, you know, do I agree with this move? No. Clearly, I don't agree with it, but Amazon's done a lot for free speech. They let you self-publish. They'll publish anything. They let me publish all my stuff. They let me have a voice. So, like, was this a bad move on their part? Absolutely, but I get it. It's a very sensitive time right now. My beloved CrossFit is under fire because Greg Glassman talked bad about the IMHE Bill Gates study because they all of a sudden want to start talking about racial policies, even though their COVID model was a complete failure, overstating deaths, fear-mongering. So somehow CrossFit's racist now. I don't know. But this, let's stick with the movie here, folks. The two main characters, we've got the main actor, he plays James Mason, and I recognized him. I'm sorry, his name is James Mason, his real life name. He actually is in Salem's Lot. If you've seen the TV, made-for-TV film Salem's Lot, he plays Straker. But in Lolita, he's Professor Humbert, old Uncle Creepy here. Humbert is his name. And then the other main character, of course, is Lolita, who is played by Sue Lyon. And she was actually 14 when she filmed it. And Humbert was 53. But the novel, the book, she's only 12. And like this caused a big stink when they tried to film it, because they wanted to cast a younger girl or something like that. Anyhow. Apparently it was... something they thought about back then. But the innuendos in the film are never ending. If you know, and I only watched it once. Usually I'll watch these films a couple times. But like the names in this film are like Miss LaBone, Dr. Kegel, like Kegel. There's a Miss Frumkiss. And you got Humbert, which sounds like Hummer. Swine is the name of a guy who's hanging out with the cops. I mean, Kubrick was, he was really into this thing. It's over the top. Now, the film itself, it starts out and you see Humbert, Daddy, we'll call him Daddy. Daddy goes in, and it's kind of a Pulp Fiction-esque sort of thing where it starts out with the ending and he's shooting this and he goes into this guy's house and he's like gonna shoot him, and this guy, you don't really know who he is yet, looks like Woody Allen, kind of has these pedo qualities about him, and he's pleading for his life and he says something very, very strange. He's begging for his life and he tells him how he can help him attend executions.
She hurt me though. To really hurt me. Listen, if you're trying to scare me, you did a pretty swell job, all right. My leg will be black and blue tomorrow. You know, this house is roomy and cool. You see how cool it is. Oh, I intend moving to England or Florence forever. You could move in. I got some nice friends, you know, who could come and keep you company here. You could use them as pieces of furniture. This one guy looks just like a bookcase. I could fix for you to attend executions. How would you like that? Just you, then nobody else. Just watching. Watch. You like watching, Captain? No, because not many people know that.
The scene cuts, and then we sort of get to the actual proper beginning of the story. But when he says when he's talking about attending executions, I mean, what's he referring to there? I would argue that these people are into some weird stuff. And there's no limit to the depths of their depravity. clearly, right? And snuff films are on the list, I bet. There were allegations that Charles Manson's case was involved with this sort of thing because Tate and Polanski were into some really weird stuff, apparently, allegedly. And they had some videotapes that were quite disturbing from what I hear. And also the theory of supposedly, allegedly, Hillary Clinton had that laptop. And, you know, they claim there's these tapes of them doing this stuff. Them eating adrenochrome and I don't know if you saw, speaking of, on my Instagram I posted a clip from Phil Schneider's last lecture and he talks about the aliens underground eating adrenochrome. This is back in the 90s. There's this long laundry list of people talking about the adrenochrome. We got Hunter Thompson, Stephen King's It, Stephen King's Dr. Sleep. They're all talking about this stuff. Monsters, Inc. Something to it. So when the pizza guy here at the beginning of the film talks about, hey, I can arrange for you to attend executions. I think he's quite literal about that. Hidden in plain sight. So, okay. So it goes to the beginning of the story. And Humbert here, old daddy, he's looking for a place to stay. He wants to rent a room out of this house. And he's talking to the woman who owns it. And he sees her 12-year-old daughter. And he's like, yeah, I'm going to stay here. And she's like, what persuaded you to decide you want to stay here? And he says, the cherry pies. Okay. Very creepy. Like I said, it was very overt. And like, he's watching Lolita hula hoop. It's just like, it makes your skin crawl a little bit. And then there's little subliminal messages. Like he tells his mom, or Humbert tells mom, he's going to take her queen. They're playing chess. And Lolita walks in at the same time. He says, I'm going to take your queen. Right? Implying that, foreshadowing what he's going to do. He's going to court her 12-year-old daughter. Okay? Now, the mom is talking to some creeper, right, who she had a fling with, apparently, and this is the same creeper from the beginning, which his character will come into play later, but he brings up her daughter in a very sort of typical creepy Hollywood way.
Certainly has, yes.
Do you know that I've been the local authority on you ever since?
Is that so? Well, that's very sweet of you. Thank you so much.
I'll never forget that intellectually stimulating talk that you gave to our club.
Yeah, it's a magnificent club. Really magnificent. Tell me one thing. Are you a columnist?
No. Don't you remember? Well, that afternoon changed my whole life.
Oh. Well, how about that?
You remember?
Did I do that? Did I?
And wow. Afterwards, you know, I showed you my garden, and I drove you to the airport.
Yes, really great fun. Listen, didn't you have a daughter? Didn't you have a daughter with a lovely name? Yeah, a lovely, what was it now? A lovely lyrical, lilting name like...
Lolita.
Lolita, that's right. Lolita, diminutive of Dolores, the tears and the roses.
Yeah. Wednesday, she's going to have a cavity filled by your Uncle Ivor.
Yes. Yes.
Like I said, I think this is a standard practice for these people. Like, if you follow the Epstein case, him and Bill Gates were hanging out with, Miss Sweden or whatever, and they commented on her daughter. And Epstein wanted to date her daughter. I mean, it's like some weird thing they do. And at this point, Humbert, daddy, he's dating mama. They're a thing now. She wants the D, but he's actually just hanging out for Lolita. Then at a certain point, she sort of like picks up on this and she tries to give him the boot. But then he sticks around and, you know, they get married, of course. Lolita goes off to school. And Humbert, daddy here, he contemplates killing the mom. Okay? Because, like, she's hating on him right now because she's, like, senses something's off. And he's like, you know what? I'm about to just kill her. But then she steps out in front of a car. And all this is after she opens a diary. He's like an idiot. He's writing this diary talking about his obsessions. And she reads it. And she's already, like, mad at him. And so she's like, I'm going to end it all. She steps out in front of a car. And so she had a broken heart, right? So now daddy is single. Mom's dead. Lolita's off at school, and she doesn't even know this. She has no idea what's going on. And all of a sudden, daddy shows up at Camp Climax for Girls. That's the name of the camp. I'm not making that up. Camp Climax for Girls. And he shows up to go grab Lolita because he's like, hey, your mom's in the hospital. She's not doing too good, and we need to kind of, like, get ready to go visit her. So I'm going to take you out of this camp right now. We're going to hang out in the hotel room. Whatever. Now, it's crazy. And what's curious to me is when he walks into Camp Climax, you see on the wall there's a flag. And then next to the flag, you'll see the butterflies, which, of course, indicative of MK Ultra, Project Monarch. And that will come back again when we get into the Epstein analysis towards the end of this film breakdown. So kind of keep that in back pocket. I'm going to put the photos of all this on Instagram at Isaac Weishaupt. Now, so Danny goes over to the camp, says, hey, mom's not doing well. She's sick. She's in the hospital. Let's go hang out. I'm going to pick you up. And let's just kind of wait it out and be ready to go visit her in the hospital when she starts getting better. So he takes her out. They're on the road. He goes to a hotel. And he's hanging out on the front porch. Lolita's up in bed. And he's out on the front porch smoking. And the night manager, a guy named George Swine, gets approached by this mysterious pizza fella from the beginning. Claire Quilty is his name. Played by Peter Sellers. Quilty, of course, very similar to Guilty, right? So Claire Quilty, and this is the creeper, right? He implies he's looking for some kind of kinky sort of sex getaway. He's using, like, a coded language, but that's what he's talking about. He's talking about to George Swine, the night manager at the hotel, and is like, hey, where can I get freaky around here? And, you know, he's trying to, you know, negotiate something out here. And what's interesting, if you look up on Spark Notes, it says something very intelligent here. I'm just going to read off of them, smarter than me. So it talks about the character of Claire Quilty is mysterious, manipulative, and utterly corrupt. Quilty is Humbert's doppelganger. He serves as a kind of mirror image of Humbert, reflecting similar traits and thoughts, but embodying a darker side of those characteristics that Humbert stridently disavows. So, very curious idea here, because Humbert clearly doesn't have any problem messing around with the young girls, but Quilty is a projection of his shadow, the dark side. And what do we always hear with these occultists? They always have to embrace the dark side. You have to shatter the idea of good and evil and just accept everything.
Hello. Hello.
Oh, you're addressing me.
Yeah.
I thought perhaps there was someone with you.
No, I'm not really with someone. I'm with you. I didn't mean that as an insult. What I really meant was that I'm with the state police here, and when I'm with them, I'm with someone, but right now I'm on my own. I mean, I'm not with a lot of people, just you.
Well, I wouldn't like to disturb you. I'll leave you alone if you prefer it.
No, you don't really have to go at all. I like it, you know, because... I don't know what it is. I sort of get the impression that you want to leave, but you don't like to leave because maybe you think I think it looks suspicious, me being a policeman and everything.
Oh, yes.
You don't have to think that because I haven't really got a suspicious mind at all. I look suspicious myself. A lot of people think I'm suspicious, especially when I stand around on street corners. One of our own boys picked me up the other week. He thought I looked a bit too suspicious standing on a street corner and everything. Tell me something. I couldn't help noticing when you checked in tonight. It's part of my job. I notice human individuals, and I notice your face. I said to myself when I saw you, I said, that's the guy with the most normal-looking face I ever saw in my life.
That's very nice of you to say, huh?
Not a bit, not a bit. It's great to see a normal face, because I'm a normal guy. It'd be great for two normal guys like us to get together and talk about world events, you know, in a normal sort of way.
Well, there's nothing I would like better than that, but I don't have much time.
Oh, it's a pity, because may I say one other thing to you? It's really on my mind. I've been thinking about it quite a lot. I noticed when you was checking in, you had a lovely, pretty little girl with you. She was really lovely. As a matter of fact, she wasn't so little, come to think of it. She was a fairly tall little, well, I mean, taller than little, you know what I mean? But she was really lovely. I wish I had a lovely, pretty tall, lovely little girl like that. I mean, it's...
Well, that was my daughter.
Your daughter? Gee, isn't it great to have a lovely, tall, pretty, little, small daughter like that? It's really wonderful. I don't have any children, or boys, or little, tall girls, or anything. I'm not even... Are you married?
Yes, I'm expecting my wife, perhaps, to come here.
May I say something? I thought you was looking a little uneasy at the desk there, and maybe I was thinking that you want to get away from your wife for a little while. I don't blame you. If I was married, I'd take every opportunity to get away from my wife. Yes.
Now, Quilty tells Humbert he's a cop, and he knows the front desk manager, George Swine, and he can get him this lovely bridal suite for him and his daughter. And the implication here is that he's connected, right? There's a ring of people, and he's connected in, and he can coordinate to have people do foul things. And I mean, if that doesn't sound like this Epstein thing, I don't know what does, right? Then it's implied that Humbert, daddy here, has sexual relations with his daughter, his stepdaughter, because this is the part of the film where she's whispering into his ear about a game she wants to play. And after that, you know, and the camera fades to black. And then after that, she asks him if she can tell their mom, who's dead, of course, but she doesn't know that, about what they did. And he's like, nope. Which confirms that something sexual in nature happened. Now, the next scene, Beardsley High School psychiatrist Dr. Zempf comes by, and he's talking to Humbert and says, hey, did you talk to your stepdaughter Lolita about the birds and the bees yet? The facts of life? Which seems like out of left field, right? But later on, we find out Dr. Zempf is really the pedo guy, Quilty, in disguise. And he also says, well, and also think you should let her be in the school play. I think she'd be a great actress, okay? And you already seen the parallels here with Hollywood. Dangling the movie roles or whatever. So daddy's like, okay, sure, I'll let her be in the play. And then, but then he finds out that Lolita is seeing another boy in the school in the play, and he loses it and he gets all mad. So he's like, nope, we're out of here. Like a real psycho. And he snatches up Lolita, and they're driving, you know, to the next town or whatever, and some guy is following them. And, you know, so he's trying to, like, lose this person following him, who turns out to be Quilty, of course. Later on, we find out. And Lolita ends up getting sick, and she goes in the hospital. And daddy goes in there to find her, but finds out that her supposed uncle came and got her. Her uncle came and got her from the hospital. Who's her uncle? Well, who do you think it is? So he loses it. He's like, there's no uncle. You know, he's all mad. So then, like, the film sort of breaks. And it's implied that, like, she's gone now. She's out of his life. Her uncle came and abducted her from the hospital. And some time goes by. Not sure how many years. A couple years, maybe. And we find out that Lolita actually got married. Presumed to be to the uncle that picked her up, abducted her from the hospital. But she calls Daddy, Humbert. She calls Daddy and is like, hey, we need some monies. I got to pay these bills. And it turns out, so he goes and visits Lolita. He needs to get to the bottom of this. He hasn't talked to her in years. It turns out she didn't actually marry this supposed uncle that abducted her. She married some other guy. named Dick, of course. Why not, right? One more innuendo. And Lolita begins telling Daddy about how this German doctor who worked at the school, Dr. Zempf, was actually Claire Quilty. And he was also the creeper following them around this whole time. And, you know, and this is the guy that was saying, talking about, you got to put this in perspective. So Quilty's this creeper guy. He dresses up as a doctor, talks to her stepdad, and is like, hey, did you teach your 12-year-old daughter about the facts of life yet? Like, what a weird question, right? This is the guy that has the connects at the hotel with the cops, with George Swine. But it turns out Quilty was also running the play that he insisted the stepfather allow Lolita to be in. And he was the one that Lolita was spending all her time with, the boyfriend that prompted Daddy to snatch her and move her to the next town. So Quilty is in this sort of Hollywood kind of business, okay? And then it comes to a head. Then it comes to the biggest part of the film. Big ups to Skinny Fresh for letting me know about this, because otherwise I probably wouldn't have watched this film, to be honest. But there's a clip, and I need you to listen to this. Take a listen.
After all, the past is the past.
What happened to this oriental-minded genius?
Look, don't make fun of me. I don't have to tell you a blasted thing.
I am not making fun of you. I'm merely trying to find out what happened. When you left the hospital, where did he take you?
To New Mexico.
Whereabouts in New Mexico?
To a dude ranch near Santa Fe. The only problem with it was he had such a bunch of weird friends staying there.
What kind of weird friends?
Weird. Painters, nudists, writers, weightlifters. But I figured I could take anything for a couple of weeks because I loved him and he was on his way to Hollywood to write one of those spectaculars. And he promised to get me a studio contract. But it never turned out that way. And instead, he wanted me to cooperate with the others, making some kind of a, you know, an art movie.
An art movie?
Yeah.
And you did it?
No, I didn't do it. And so he kicked me out.
Yes, it's implied that Lolita was abducted and taken to Zorro Ranch with a promise of a acting career. She's hanging out with a bunch of weirdos, doing a bunch of weird things. Of course it's Zorro Ranch. Santa Fe is only like 50 miles from Zorro Ranch, Jeffrey Epstein's ranch. And, you know, she talks about how this ranch, this dude ranch, had all these eccentric people in there. And it sounds just like if you listen to my analysis of Marjorie Cameron, Jack Parsons was hanging out with a bunch of eccentric weirdos too, doing a bunch of weird things. Here we're going to segue over into Epstein. And that's about the end of the film. I guess we could finish. Yeah, let me just finish the film up since you've been listening to the story this far. The film ends. She reveals to Daddy that she got abducted, taken to this ranch. And she was like, you guys are weird, I'm out of here. And then she, you know, settled down and lived a normal life. And the film ends. Humbert's heart is broken. And he goes, and he heads out and he goes back to shoot Quilty for dragging her to the dude ranch. And this is the beginning of the film again, where he pleads, he's pleading for his life and says, I can help you attend executions. Because remember, this guy is connected everywhere. So Quilty is your quintessential connected guy. He's like the Epstein in this story. Now, and that's the end of the film. Now, let's talk about Epstein here. The show on Netflix, episode 1, I posted these images already. I'll try to post them again. That way you don't have to hunt around for them. There's paintings of the owl and the bathtub, right? That's Maria Farmer. She's one of the victims. It shows her painting and curious choice, right? She's painting people in bathtubs. She's painting owls. Okay. And she says she met Epstein while selling her Alice in Wonderland paintings. Isn't that strange? Alice in Wonderland. The story about questioning the nature of reality and not conforming to the rules of society is what that's about. And Epstein, by the way, shortchanged her on the paintings because he's a cheap ass. which you find out throughout the whole series. And they talk in episode one. They talk a little bit about the witch hex and the severed cat heads. This was all stuff we talked about before from the Vanity Fair whitewash of Epstein before he got convicted. They go over Trump's quote of him liking younger girls. And some people would say this is one. And you can look at this one of two ways. One, you could say, well, see, Trump was trying to reveal the truth to the masses. Why say anything at all? So when he says, yeah, he likes these young girls. But then on the other hand, some people say, well, it shows he knew about it and he was okay with it on some level. I mean, he was saying some creepy things, right? He's saying grab him by the money. He's saying he's commenting on 13-year-old girls. He's commenting on his own daughter, just like we see in Lolita a little bit. He's banging porn stars. He's kind of a freak, right? Then episode one, we find out that one of the calls to investigate, one of the 911 calls to investigate Epstein was taken by Officer Pagan. I was like, seriously, Officer Pagan? Whose last name is Pagan? There's probably someone out there listening with the last name Pagan, like, hey, wait a minute, buddy. But I thought that was odd, right? Episode two, you know, people ask how much money is too much money to me sometimes. And I say, here you go. Look at Epstein. That's too much money. He had so much money. He had a secretary taking down memos to make calendar appointments for these girls. It's too much money. Okay. Talks about his time at Bear Stearns and Dalton. What I found curious was there's no mention of Attorney General Barr's father, who's the one that hooked him up with a job. I thought that was very curious. They don't bring that up. You know, because they kind of allude to this idea of, like, this guy moved up real quick, tons of money, no real understanding why that happened. Well, it's because Attorney General Barr's father hooked him up with that. Then another curious thing, Robert Maxwell, Ghislaine Maxwell's father, he's that media mogul. They just say he died in murky circumstances. And they left it at that. There's all these weird ties to Mossad and intelligence agencies that you can get into with Maxwell. So they weren't revealing too much on this show. So, like, it's fine. It was like a C+ in my book. But episode four is where things really heat up. Episode four, it heats up. We hear so many strange things happen. Like Prince Andrew. Okay. Prince Andrew. So the testimony goes that Virginia, I forget how to pronounce her last name, Roberts, Virginia Roberts, but her last name's like Jeffrey or something like that. Virginia Roberts, she claims that Prince Andrew was like sweating all over her and dancing while she was at the Lolita Island, and you know, but he refutes it in 2019 and says he doesn't even have he has a condition where he doesn't sweat.
I didn't have any remorse at all. His arrogance about it. I mean, the whole I don't sweat thing.
I have a peculiar medical condition, which is that I don't sweat, or I didn't sweat at the time.
This guy was like profusely sweating all over me, and I don't remember her. I've never been upstairs at Ghislaine's townhouse. How did you know that's upstairs?
She provided a photo of the two of you together.
Yes.
Your arm was around her waist.
Yes.
You've seen the photo.
I've seen the photograph.
How do you explain that?
I can't.
He doesn't sweat. What is he, a reptile? Yes, he's a shape-shifting reptile, it turns out. They say that the royal family has the reptilian blood. Well, there you go. We also find out that the reason Epstein didn't get bond is because he had a backup plan. He had diamonds and fake passports, which to me supports the theory that he never really died. He had an escape plan. Okay, makes sense, right? Then there's, you know, there's all these news talking about the conspiracy theories, you know, going nuts because of the weird death of Epstein. You know, the cameras weren't working, the guards fell asleep, He transferred his will through a trust before he died. And recalling my book, The Vaccine Conspiracy, we talked about Epstein and Gates because there's a guy named Mr. Boris Nikolic, and he runs a venture capital firm with Bill Gates, and he was the science advisor for the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And it turned out that he was a fallback executor to Epstein's will. So pretty cozy relationship, right? Then on the show, they've got an autopsy doctor discussing how Epstein couldn't possibly have hanged himself because he had this fractured neck bone, the hyoidal bone. And what's more shocking than anything in this show, he reaches into a cup with his bare hands and pulls out someone's hyoidal bone to show us how it works. With his bare hands, he's holding someone's grimy neck bone. Very strange. Okay? If you haven't seen it, it's in episode 4. Very weird. Now, episode 4, it ends, and this is going to be crazy, so brace yourself, with Maria Farmer, one of the victims. She's doing a painting, and it has a UFO and all this stuff on it. And she says, Epstein is in the NASA tower on the UFO. What the hell does that mean?
And then I began again painting because I was tired of being afraid. I felt like I wanted to expose the monsters, and I just needed to get that out. And so this is an illustration. Basically, it's my diagram for the FBI because I want them to see what I told them all those years ago. And it's a version of Bosch's Garden of Earthly Delights, which is basically just like Dante's Inferno, portraying heaven, hell, and earth. This is our lovely Ghislaine Maxwell. She's a pill, a hard pill to swallow, and she's the property of the FBI in this drawing. I put Epstein here with his little UFO on a NASA tower because Epstein was given a free ride by our government. And, that makes me angry.
Hey, real quick, this is Isaac. After recording the show, I was grabbing the clips to insert into the show. And on episode 4 of the Jeffrey Epstein Filthy Rich series, you hear Maria Farmer talking about how the painting with the UFOs and all that stuff was what she gave the FBI. It was based off information she gave the FBI, and right when she says it, you'll notice right behind her on the wall is a Freemasonic compass and square. I couldn't believe it. Didn't make it into my little analysis here, but I wanted to interject to let you know that. And again, I'll emphasize this on the images I'll be posting on Instagram. So, crazy. What is going on? And I've got my theories on that. I think it's tied into New Mexico being a source of UFO alien technology. Roswell, of course, but then there's also this mysterious location talked about in Diane Peluska's book, Cosmic America. They think there's another crash site out there in New Mexico, and maybe that's why he was out there. She also paints Ghislaine Maxwell as a lizard person, again. More shape-shifting reptilian stuff, tying into the adrenochrome, the idea of fear being a form of sustenance for these weirdos. But she says she told the FBI all this stuff years ago. Now, what's curious here is that she paints each of the girls involved with this, the victims, and she says, well, Virginia used a butterfly as a symbol of freedom. So she painted her with the butterfly, but she didn't realize that when she painted it. And she says she painted it, and she's like, oh, turns out, like, she actually likes this butterfly as a symbol of freedom. I didn't know that when I painted this. Well, curiously enough, it's in Lolita. Again, go back to when Lolita was at the camp, Camp Climax. And in that screenshot, you see the butterflies right next to the flag. Now, are these things all connected? I don't know. But there's this weird sort of thing going on, a little as above, so below, if you will, where reality and fiction start blurring together. does one thing cause the other? I don't know, because Lolita was filmed in 62. You know, what was Epstein, 10 years old at that time? He clearly didn't buy Zor Ranch back then. So could there be some kind of influence, some kind of cosmological influence happening here? And maybe that's what the butterfly is for in this. Of course, in The Shining, if you recall, in my book, there's Project Monarch on the wall in the day room where Danny's standing. It just says Monarch and it has someone skiing. All very curious, right? Now, the Zorro Ranch, we talked about this a while ago. It's right by Santa Fe, of course, which is where in Lolita she says that she was dragged to this dude ranch by Santa Fe. And it was there that Jeffrey Epstein thought he was going to seed the human race with his DNA. It was a real transhuman flex, if you will. Now, previously we brought this up on the show because he was trying to build a sort of Westworld out there, if you recall. He had this fake little town with a fake saloon and all this stuff. From artnet.com, I'll read you. It says he was in the process of building a Wild West-style village on the property, complete with a saloon and a general store. Now, in that article, we can also see parallels to Lolita, where she was enticed to go onto this ranch as a lure to be entered into some coveted Hollywood club. From the ArtNet, and this is from people that were victims of Epstein, says, the summer of 1995 was poised to be a dream come true for one group of recent graduates from the New York Academy of Art. They were a select few who'd been chosen from their class to go on an all-expenses-paid trip to New Mexico to study under the prestigious painter Eric Fischel to attend the debut of the newly launched site Santa Fe Biennial and to meet with a wealthy benefactor who wanted to buy emerging artist work. The patron was said to be building a vast mansion on his ranch in New Mexico and at the end of the trip would commission one of the students to paint a mural. There was a feeling that someone was going to come out of this an art star, says Ursula Rudenberg. So, again, dangling the fame and fortune. But just like in the film Lolita, the girls, when they get to the ranch, they're uncomfortable because Epstein and Maxwell, they keep doing weird stuff, try to scare these girls. Like they're putting skeletons in the closet and talking about deadly rattlesnakes everywhere. Further in that article, it says, it was the weirdest dinner party I've ever been to. Oh boy. It was the weirdest dinner party I've ever been to all my life, she added. I've been around a lot of rich people in New York and many are misbehaved, but this was another level. Okay. And just like in Lolita, the young lady completely left the scene after being weirded out so bad. Says, Rudenberg, too, says that although she didn't experience anything like what Farmer went through, the experience with Epstein soured her on the art world. I was so fed up with the whole scene, and Epstein was part of it. I left New York. I just thought, I don't want to paint for these people, and I stepped out of that whole world. So again, just like Lolita, she completely checked out. Like, nope. And just like we saw in the Epstein documentary with Maria Farmer's paintings, Epstein was a cheap ass. He didn't even buy the paintings after all that. He just took them. Now, in conclusion, let's wrap this up. This might be the most Kubrick Illuminate confirmed film out of the whole bunch. I couldn't believe it. It wasn't in my Kubrick's code book, even. And if you read Kenneth Anger's Hollywood Babylon, you'll see that Hollywood has always had this history of sexual misconduct, even murder. There's a story about Fatty Arbuckle that'll make you cringe. Got a couple things here. Fun fact here, the heart-shaped glasses that you see on the artwork for the film Lolita, not even in the movie, believe that. People like Katy Perry wear those sometimes for the promos. And recall that Katy Perry also said she sold her soul after leaving her gospel career. Said she sold her soul just like they wanted Lolita to do at Zorro Ranch. Interesting enough, right? And remember, Lana Del Rey had the song with the lyrics about Lolita, and she was trying to speak out. She wanted to make an album revealing the truth, but then decided not to. Now, Wikipedia, it says that the novel is even creepier. It says, the film entirely omits the critical episode in Humbert's life, in which at age 14, he was interrupted making love to young Annabelle Lee, who shortly thereafter died, and consequently omits all indications that Humbert had a preoccupation with prepubescent girls prior to meeting Dolores Hayes. That's the mom. That's the Lolita's mom, Dolores Hayes. In the novel, Humbert gives his youthful, amorous relationship with Annabelle Lee, thwarted by both adult intervention and her death, as the key to his obsession with nymphettes. The film only mention of nymphettes is an entry in Humbert's diary specifically revolving around Lolita. Humbert explains that the smell and taste of youth filled his desires throughout adulthood. Quote, that little girl with her seaside limbs and ardent tongue haunted him ever since. He thus claims that Lolita began with Annabelle, and that Annabelle's spell was broken by incarnating her in another. It's a little soul transfer thing going on there. So Quilty, or Guilty, or whatever you want to call him, he's connected in with these Hollywood pedos. He can arrange to watch executions. He's got power over everyone. He even plays this German head doctor, very Nazi MKUltra-esque. He's even taking girls to the Zorro Ranch, promising them careers in art or Hollywood or whatever. And ironically, this is going to blow your mind. Get ready. I hope you're sitting. Guess where Zorro Ranch is located? It's near Santa Fe, like in Lolita, like she says. But it's in a town called Stanley, New Mexico. Yes, indeed. Like Stanley Kubrick. And like I said, I don't think all of this is coordinated on purpose. Like, I don't think someone actually ran through the logistics of saying, like, I know. How about in 62, a guy named Stanley Kubrick's going to make this film. And then, 30 years later, we'll have a guy named Epstein who's just like Quilty buy the thing in a town called Stanley. Like, I don't think that's how it works. I think there's this weird connection. Like the occult magicians, they believe in as above, so below. And I think there's something to be said for that. Okay? That's all I'm saying. Like when I said Lana Del Rey was doing those witch hexes to Trump, and maybe that had some inadvertent consequences. Like a pandemic and a race war. Now, Epstein, of course, was into transhumanism, wanted to see the human race with his DNA, wanted to have his head and penis cryogenically frozen. He loved science too, buddies with Bill Gates, and Zorro Ranch was near the Manhattan Project, where the Nazi scientists helped with the atomic bombs. And of course, the deserts of New Mexico are where the UFOs came through, where the portal got ripped from either the nuclear bomb testing or the Babylon working rituals of L. Ron Hubbard and Jack Parsons. So, to wrap up the conclusion, this film is maybe one of the most illuminate confirmed Kubrick films that there is. It certainly deserves to be in Kubrick's code. My analysis of, we went through Clockwork Orange, Eyes Wide Shut, The Shining, 2001 A Space Odyssey. This one belongs right in there with them. And if you're on Patreon, which you should be if you're listening to this, then you can access the Kubrick's Code ebook. You can access the Kubrick's Code video I made. It's like 2.5 hours of clips from the movies. Check all that out again. Take another look at it. See what you think. Thank you again for being on the Patreon team. I appreciate your support. I need it. I need it to keep this thing going. So I do appreciate it. And until next time, stay woke.